Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
John Smith is America and poor Yukiko. Stay tuned as we discuss Man in the High Castle, Season 4, Episode 9.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hey, everybody, I'm Rachel Goodman, and I'm here with Belle.
That's right, I'm Belle Blankenship. Good to have you guys back.
And we're here to discuss Man in the High Castle, Season 4, Episode 9. Yes. Things are getting crazy as we count down to the finale, which neither Belle and I have seen. So
yes.
We legitimately... do not know what's going to happen, but we have all the theories, so
yep.
Stay tuned, because we are going to do our special segments, including our news segment, our factual, our historical segment at the end, and our predictions.
Yes.
Belle, we were talking a lot about this a couple hours ago.
Yeah, man. All I wrote for my overall thoughts was just, holy hell. Obviously we're not going to, but we could just talk about the last scene for the whole hour, but there's so much. Like, I feel like this is the episode where really, like, it's too much good stuff in this one.
So, okay, because this is such a pivotal moment with John Smith, I almost feel like we should talk about the ending first and go from there. Because
let's go crazy.
We had a lot with John where really all we need to really talk about with him leading up to the end is this whole thing with Gortzman and how he was summoned. We know from episode 8 he was summoned to Berlin.
Right.
I did not see this going well for him. I thought he was a dead man.
Oh, me too. Well, see, the thing, honestly, let's just get into it because it's too good.
Seriously.
So now once you see what unfolds in Berlin, for me, I was like, well, how long has he and Gortzman been scheming? Because for me, ever since we've met Gortzman, I feel like he's either threatening or warning John. Every time they have an interaction, you're like, was that, like, is he on his side? And so then I think it was episode 8 where, you know, Gertzman's there, he's like, you gotta go to Berlin, and John's like, well, have a drink with me. So I first thought John was gonna, like, poison him, but now that you see this happen, you're like, okay, this was probably them scheming what was gonna happen in Berlin.
And it's crazy because we know that our good buddy J. Edgar Hoover, who we're going to talk about him tonight in the history section.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is the perfect song for him, by the way.
Yes.
And I'm just saying this now, but when John Smith took the knife to J. Edgar Hoover, I was clapping. I was like, yes, because that dude, he is going, like, he's a slime ball.
Yes, and see, for me, like, I think, because we already know Hoover has, I mean, he betrayed John way earlier. So for me, and this just really, I think, shows so well, it's just so true to John's character. He's always one step ahead, because I always wondered why he kind of kept Hoover around, because John's notorious. If he knows someone doesn't back him, he'll cut them. Mm-hmm. They're done for. So I kind of wondered in the back of my head, like, why is he keeping him around? He knows he's betrayed him once. Like, surely he'll do this again. But it's really, I'm like, well, if he hadn't, it wouldn't have led up to this epic moment. So he knew, I guess, like, all along, maybe. So,
and it's interesting because we get it in clips. We've only seen pieces of conversations that John has had with certain people. I think it's brilliant the way that he reacted to this. And I think, like, that when Hoover came to him and said, "We want to monitor everybody, blah blah blah. Like, can you let me set this up?" And John's quick reaction was, sure, get it approved.
Just like, show me your plan.
And specifically because I think John realized that this is how it had to go. That he specifically wanted Himmler to see him, to hear him saying certain things. and that they would call him in. But certain things, so like the real plan, John found a way to talk about it and get it set up without anybody actually knowing. But what I find interesting is that we, the viewer, only were let in to believe certain things. And I kind of love, like, a show doesn't always get away with executing it this way. But in this particular case, the execution was flawless.
Absolutely. Like, I literally never, and I love the scene where John approaches Himmler. And just that, really, it was that moment where John's like, I never loved you. I saw you as a petty little tyrant. You're just a failed chicken. Like, I was like, what is going on? Then he kills him. And I was sure when he walked out the doors, he was going to get arrested.
And I thought that this was, when we first saw it, I thought this was John's way of saying, I'm America. I am not Germany. I'm not doing these terrible things anymore. Like, I thought that he had joined the revolution and that he was dead and I thought that the reason he did it was because he knew he was gonna die anyway.
I thought this was like his last stand, so I was like, well, what a way to go out. He just killed Himmler, he's about to get arrested, and then when you see that this has, so for me, before we have this big reveal, I had thought, I was like, wow, well, now we can see that maybe he should not have been so loyal to the Nazis for so long, because now it's screwed him over. But in reality, it's probably a good thing that he stayed loyal for so long, or else he would have never been able to pull this off. He could have never built the I mean, like, Himmler literally said he felt like John was a son to him. So, in a way, again, John's always one step ahead, and it was incredible that they pulled off this feat. So, I cannot say enough amazing things about the ending for this for this episode.
Well, I think what really stood out to me is that he was five steps ahead of everybody.
Yes.
And he had this deal with Gertzman that we would have never known. But I feel like if we go back and we look, everything was kind of a planted seed. And so the question now, and I'm just going to go ahead and go here, even though we'll talk more about this in predictions. The question now is, we don't know Gertzman that well. Mm-hmm. From the outside, obviously, he's a member of the Nazi Party. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we would guess that he has similar ideas as anyone in the Nazi Party. But the question is that just a front? Could we potentially see that these two men are actually going to bring the world back to something that we had seen previously in ordinary, well, not ordinary, but the America that we know. And that's my other question with John, is he has always struck me as an American first, beyond being a German. And Himmler and the group pointed that out when they were talking about who they wanted to lead the operation to get back the Northwest. So, and they really they specifically said to John, you're not really Aryan, you're American first. And so they really pointed that out. They they stressed the whole, like, that ideal man who should be running. And that was my question too, is that maybe it's that John wants to bring back the America that he knows, or maybe it's because he understood that in Himmler's eyes, regardless of Himmler saying that he thought of him as like a son, I don't think that John really believed that. I think that he understood that his place would never be with the Germans.
Yes, and I think Himmler makes that, or one of them during that meeting, basically, you know, says to be the master race. So I think that actually, to me, alluded a little bit to in our last show with Rich, how he kind of mentions just even within these different groups, you have all these factions. So, you know, even in the Reich, it is clear that, you know, American Nazis are not on par with Berlin Nazis. So to me, after he said that, when he kind of referred to this master race, it almost seemed like a resistance would be inevitable, because there's just no, I mean, if they're not eye to eye, it's not going to work. And I mean, we saw that happen with the JPS multiple times, you know, kind of these like inner wars just within that regime. So yeah, I think that was, and I do hope, that's my hope, is that now we are finally going to see John, you know, tap back into the American way. Maybe he will restore, because I think, as we had kind of discussed the last one, this whole time John has really just been trying to survive. And, you know, so him building his way up in the ranks was the only way he could keep his family safe. So for me, I'm just hoping that truly was just a way for him to survive, and he hasn't actually bought into the philosophy, or he doesn't go into this like power trip. So of course, you know, there's only one wet episode left, so I have no idea
and how that's going to play out. That's my concern, is that it's the next episode's 58 minutes. If this is, I feel like it's either one of those things where we're going to find out that John Smith has been on our side the whole time, or no, he's power hungry and he needs to, his ending will not be good.
Yes.
I feel like it's very polarized. It's going to be one or the other.
Right.
Now my other thought, when we go back to America, we see what this looks like for John to take over as the, you know, American Reich, as they're calling it. What I found fascinating is, outside of there being a swastika on his arm, the American flag, like we really, like in other shots, I felt like they focused more on the Nazi flag and the swastika. In this shot, we actually get a full American flag. Oh, and so I found that very, very interesting. Yeah. It almost felt like a man who was leading America.
Who was coming back.
Yeah.
Oh, now, I like that. Yeah.
But what I found especially interesting is with Helen, and we'll get to her next.
Yes.
Because she had a lot this episode.
Oh, yeah, man.
But with Helen, when she goes in and she just wants one moment to talk to him privately, and she doesn't seem to get it, when the other men kind of push her out and the doors close on her, it reminded me of The Godfather in that moment when Diane Keaton's character gets pushed out and she suddenly realizes, I have no say. I'm not with my husband anymore. Like, things are different between us. He's no longer mine.
Yes.
And I think that, obviously, with John, it's different because he's been pushing Helen away for a while now.
Yeah. And I think that is one, and this may kind of go into prediction territory, but me, I'm like, well, we've already crossed those lines. Yeah. So, yeah, I think what I'm a little nervous about is, like, we're finally seeing John step in this position where he may actually be the good guy and, like, once and for all. But now there's this dissonance because Helen only has the information that Juliana has given her, which is, like, that John is a liar, he's not really to be trusted, and basically asking her to more or less murder her husband for the sake of millions of lives. So I'm a little nervous that, like, Helen's not going to get the word in time, and she might end up giving up John right before John actually tries to do something good. So I am a little worried, and that's why I'm hoping, like, maybe they'll get in touch or something, because, well, I mean, so I'm hoping it doesn't go that way, but I'm a little nervous that's where it's headed.
I'm concerned with the idea that Juliana believes she needs to kill John to fix all of this. I'm not quite following her logic there, because it's like Hydra in Marvel. You cut off one arm and like five more grow back. Yeah.
You're right. And I think that might kind of go back to where she has that dream about the portal, like, go in, like, it basically shuts down. So to me, it seems like it's not that a person needs to be killed. It's that this entity really needs to die. So I'm hoping, maybe she will change her tactic, or if she finds out what's happened, that maybe she will just go to the source and kind of figure out how to destroy this portal rather than this man. Because anybody can, you know, step up in his place and make this whole thing all over again. So I didn't think about that. But, yeah, I think it is a little flawed right now. It always made sense until now. And now we're like, I don't know if that's really the right move.
Yeah. And then, speaking of the portals, what I also find interesting is that we've seen Juliana, I think in the last couple of episodes, where her dreams are connected to it seems like her dreams are somehow connected to the portal. To me, what wasn't clear is if she, because of her ability to travel, is somehow like setting it off, or if she's feeling that something is off with it because she's a traveler, in the sense that maybe other worlds are trying to come into this world. So they haven't told us that
That's
yet.
That's true. Yeah. And that was something, we had talked about, because you're right. Like, this world is only entering the alt world, and it's not reverse. Yeah. So, I don't.
My thought is, and I don't know that the other worlds, think, though, that there's another John Smith, thousands of them, and that another John Smith would know what this John Smith is doing, potentially, because he's doing similar things, and that he would try to get in, maybe through this portal, maybe through another portal. It just, you would think, like, my question is, if these worlds are all connected through this one area in the Poconos, or if that's not, because if this is the one connection, then why would other worlds not also be doing the same thing?
Not be coming back. Or like, why aren't there films from, like, the Nazi world making their way there? So, yeah, it seems like there's got to be somebody who has kind of tapped in. Yeah, that's actually a good question. I never really thought about that. So, of course, yeah, anyone watching, got any theories, throw them our way, comment below. And so kind of just to also go back to Helen, of course, have that epic scene at the women's clinic. That one to me, I feel like she is really, really, for her, I don't really know what she will decide to do, because once Juliana basically tells her, once you've seen the films, it changes everything. So she says, you're going to have to make a decision too. It's, of course, she says, he's the father of my children. How can I do that? Blah, blah, blah. And then finally we see Martha die, which I was done with her. She was the worst.
I was scared for Wyatt, too.
I was, too. Especially when she stabbed him. I was like, he's done.
Because we know what she's capable of.
Yes. Yeah. We've seen it. So that, to me, was a crazy scene.
I love how they handled it with Helen, though, because it's just hard to... Yes, she's been in the neutral zone. Yes, she is no longer the same Helen that we met in season one. But she is still someone living in this world. And for her to see those things and to see what could be and to have this meeting with Juliana, it's just she still needs time to process all of this, especially coming to terms, I think, not even with what she's learning, but seeing that other version of herself, seeing how John is with her. Yes. She could sense that this was a different man, and I feel like that might help her come to terms with being able to say goodbye to this John.
Yes. Yeah. So I feel like she is really kind of between a rock and a hard place right now. Yeah. And yeah, I think that was, and I'm glad that the way that Juliana approached her also, it wasn't aggressive. It was just, look, you need to make a decision. I hope you make the right choice. And of course they kind of got cut off with, also, it was kind of convenient that they had, like, a crematory, like, a place to burn her body right there. So that was, I was like, huh, that was an interesting addition, but glad it was there. So, yeah, I think that's why I'm most looking forward in the finale to see what Helen decides, because that cannot be an easy decision. Of course, I feel like I could respect her either way. I could respect her for sparing his life, just because how do you... have your husband murdered, but of course I would respect her even more if she didn't, because then she is kind of doing this greater good, which I feel like she's been trying to do ever since she was in the neutral zone.
Yeah, and Jennifer too, and
yes,
and also, I mean, clearly John is now control of America, so all those tapes have been done away with. One of the things that stands out is when Helen mentioned to him about their apartment being tapped. And what we had seen is that Bridget actually is the one who told her.
Yes. I'm so glad you mentioned, because I had predicted like 3 or 4 episodes ago, I think, that Bridget was going to, I thought she was going to be like a snitch, but I didn't realize she was actually going to be forced into telling. So that to me was more, it made me feel better knowing that she did, because she even said, like, they're like a family to me. So that scene was really sad too.
And I love how J. Edgar Hoover was like, but you have your own family.
Yes.
Yeah, how
I know. So that was, so I'm like, it's cool that my prediction was right, but it was sad that that's how it transpired.
Yeah.
Another thing that just now kind of segueing into a different topic would be the BCR. We are now seeing that they are in control of this new government. And one scene I really love is when the vigilantes come, they're like, hey, you have Keto, we want him. And she says, nope, we're giving him a fair trial, even though, like, he's never given anybody a free trial or a fair trial. And to me, I feel like that just really shows how much she wants to change this new world. And I think that was also evident in the opening scene when she's with Elijah in the JPS room, and Elijah, he just feels a little off about it. He just wants to gut the place. And he said, you know, we could fit up to 10 comrades in here. And I was thinking she would kind of oppose that and say, you know, why can't we have our own space? But she agrees. She's like, well, if that's what you want to do, let's do it. So it just kind of shows she is always, at this point, I think she really wants to start anew. So even the people that she hates, or they all hate, deserve a fair trial. And I think another thing, I think it was in the last episode where they start to hang Keto and then the BCR save them. I feel like that was interesting that they did, like, an attempted lynching, because obviously that is such a sore subject. So I think that almost was, it was like, it doesn't matter who it is, it's wrong and it's disrespectful and it's humiliating. So I thought just that, the because they could have tried to kill Keto any number of ways, and the way that they do it that way, I thought was, it was very cool to see that and kind of see how the BCR reacted to that. So
I definitely have a few things to say, and then let's definitely touch on Yukiko as well.
Oh,
and
of course,
since they're around all of this.
Yeah.
But first, what I find fascinating is that, one, like the last, I would say episode 8 and 9, they really showed us what it meant for Japan to evacuate San Francisco.
Yes.
And then we see in 9, we saw the long lines going up to the boat. We saw everybody was in a rush to get out of there. And also that we kind of see not only the BCR trying to figure out what they're going to do, how they're going to get running water, etc., but we also see, like, I don't know how else to describe them, but, like, you know, these, like, Caucasian males who are stepping up, and I can just feel the racism coming from them. Like, they strike me as the typical, like, 1950s, 60s people who are going to cause, who are going to wreak havoc, especially for any Japanese person who happened to stay behind, which is why, with Childan, that moment, one, I kind of expected that they were not going to let Childan get on the boat.
Yeah.
That made sense to me. It does not surprise me that they gave him that problem. What really, like, especially pissed me off is when they were offering him all these things, the guy, like, the guard, and he kept them with no intention of letting Childan get on the boat.
That broke my heart, too, because I was sure. I mean, and what makes me the saddest is now Yukiko doesn't have anything to remember Childan for. So that scene was so devastating, and it almost did kind of make it seem like, was the Crown Princess a little too optimistic? Because obviously she gives him this free rite of passage and the guards. So I'm kind of concerned, like, if she really thought they would have let him, you know?
Now, this could be coming from the fact that, you know, a couple hours ago we had the interview with Mayumi. Yeah. I feel like, based upon what we learned from her about the character, that there's certain things that, like, she can be very innocent in a way because she is sheltered in, not that she hasn't seen anything, but she definitely has, but certain things she probably, like, I get the feeling that she would expect people to act more genuinely and more, more acceptingly than they might in this case. And so I think that she had every intention of, whoever the guard was, letting him on the boat. What I think is incredible, though, is Childan, he recognizes or recognized that if Yukiko stayed with him and they were together, that those white, the Caucasian dudes,
the vigilantes,
like, that they were going to go after her or him or both of them. Yeah. And that either way, like, if they stay, it's not going to be good. They can't go to the Reich. Yeah. So the whole thing is that essentially, if she stayed with him, they would most likely both die. But sending her away, at least one of them will live.
Yeah, it just seems like Childan always gets screwed by the JPS. Like, no matter
BCR too.
Yeah, BCR. He really gets screwed by everybody. But to me, I feel like he always tries to come back to the JPS or kind of this Japanese lifestyle, and it always comes to bite him later. And I think it kind of goes back to that line that Yukiko said in a previous episode where she says, you know, you have that American optimism. And even here, I think she kind of bought into this optimism, too, that it could actually work. And, yeah, that scene was devastating. And another scene I thought that was very touching, too, was when Keto was in the gas room and he has that moment kind of seeing his seeing Toru beside him as a kid. That moment to me was heart-wrenching because you can really just see I feel like now we can really see the guilt. He's having to come face to face with his guilt because he's in a room all by himself. He has all this time to think. And I feel like he really regrets forcing his son to go into military, and he just wishes it, life had gone a different way.
The most interesting thing I found about that scene in particular is that Kido, he, at first, when he's imagining his little son, at first, when the son says, oh, I want to get into baseball, Kido starts to say, no, you're going to go into the military, be a soldier. But then he backtracks. And that's I think that finally he's starting to realize that he shouldn't have forced his son into something. I mean, obviously it was war. Like, he probably would have, you know, been forced to join.
But that is kind of true. I feel like that kind of switch, because you're right, that did kind of throw me off when he suddenly starts to, because they have a tender moment and then he's like, no, you have to join the military. So it almost, maybe that's sort of a manifestation of kind of the front he always has to put and this kind of duty mentality he has, and then him just kind of shaking himself and realize, like, what am I doing? And then when he brings up the baseball, so even then, you know, he, in that tender moment, he didn't really have to do that, but it's almost like that's his automatic response when it comes to kind of unrealistic things like that. So that, you're right, that was kind of a cool thing that he does at first, and then he backpedals and is like, actually, what am I doing? I'm still doing it.
I just want to mention one more thing, and then we can get to our segments.
Sure.
But the major thing that I'm very curious about, when they drop the leaflets, and we know that first it's like, we think it's bombs. I am curious, I'm very curious, and this we can save more for predictions too.
Yeah.
But what the Reich is going to do now that John Smith is in charge.
And I was also wondering if maybe the Nazis would, or if the Yakuza are going to come back some way, because we already had Okami, who is in the Yakuza, approach the BCR basically saying, you need us to get your power back, your water back, everything. So first I was wondering if maybe the BCR would ally for that sake, but now I'm wondering if maybe the Nazis would ally with the Yakuza just to kind of isolate the BCR. So I thought that was actually a very cool way to start that. I think that was even more moving to have the leaflets than it was just to drop bombs everywhere. So they really, the opening and the ending scenes were fantastic.
Absolutely. So before we move on, did you have any other final thoughts you wanted to give for the episode?
Actually, I do have two things, quick things.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed when Childen and Yukiko were packing up their things
is
Childen kind of went back to his old way where he's like, we got to get all these collectibles. Like, he went for a while, we're like, all right, he doesn't care.
Well, I think the only thing there is that he was ensuring their financial future. And he thought, I don't think that it was so much he wanted to open up his own business. He probably assumed, well, if we do this, if we sell this in Japan, it will give us enough so we can find a place.
You know, that actually makes me feel better because I was like, I don't want him to go back to this. So, actually, then that would make sense because then it's like he still doesn't really care because he'd just sell it to do well anyways.
Who knows, though? He could have ended
up. Who knows? And then I think the other thing I had was, so when we first see Kido in the gas room in this episode, I think one moment, that was another touching moment to me, is when we hear kind of over the TV that the last Japanese ship is sailing out, which means he is kind of utterly alone at this point. And then you see that he's watching and singing the anthem, and that's the last JPS broadcast. And once it shuts, he kind of like shudders, and it's like he is really alone. And it was almost like even the TV has left him. He has no one left. He has no idea where Toru is. So really that scene just made me hurt for Kido. And I feel like as we talked about, we love him and we hate him every episode. Now this one, I pity him so much.
I'm at a point where I like Kido. Obviously he's done things, but I feel like he has, the arc that we've seen with him he's redeemable. He has done, there's nothing that he's done that has, you know, that isn't any worse than any other.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So let's go ahead and get to our news segment then.
Ooh, all right. After that's Buzz me. All right. So I have one little piece. Rufus Sewell, who plays John Smith, will actually be starring in an upcoming series called The Pale Horse, which is set for screens next year. This two-part series is adapted from the Agatha Christie novel of the same name. I love Agatha Christie. I have not read this one, so I'd like to before I watch it. And the synopsis is that when a murder investigation is launched into the death of a young woman, a mysterious list of names is discovered in her shoe, prompting an inquiry not only to find the killer, but also to understand the list of names. So Sewell is actually going to play this widowed antique dealer. His name is Mark Easterbrook, who investigates how and why his name came to appear on the list. And Sewell actually said in an official release, "What appealed to me about the script and this character was that the veneer of sophistication, of class and luxury is only possible if it's supported by a vicious, brutal underbelly." And to me, I feel like that completely describes a man in the High Castle, because that's where John Smith's character is at. So, yeah, so that's just a fun little tidbit about where some of the actors are at right now.
Awesome. That sounds very interesting,
too. Yeah, check it out.
Yeah. All right, so let's jump to our true history section.
Woohoo. Oh, there it is.
And he's back. Yes, we're going to talk J. Edgar Hoover, the man, the one. okay, as we were talking about earlier, I am not surprised that this man, that this is how they portrayed him in, you know, in the Reich, considering J. Edgar Hoover is a real guy, obviously. Mm-hmm. He was the first director of the FBI, and there is his headshot there.
Uh-huh.
And also, one thing to note is that if you're all familiar with Senator McCarthy and HUAC, which basically investigated people who were allegedly communist, Edgar Hoover actually helped McCarthy during that time period. If you've all read The Crucible by Arthur Miller, that book, though not set in the 50s and 60s, actually was written because of the witch hunts happening in America in at the time, Miller's contemporary time. All right. The other thing I have is from our chat from last episode.
Oh, yeah.
We have Hubby Joe with his information.
I love that.
Hubby Joe is
never change, Hubby Joe.
He's my husband, in case anyone
knows. Oh. That's funny.
Hubby Joe said, "John Smith was a former U.S. Army captain who joined the SS following the surrender of the United States. He became the first American to be promoted to the rank of Obstgruppenführer." Thank you, Hubby
Thanks,
Joe,
Hubby Joe,
for that tidbit. We appreciate it. And Hubby Joe, shout out to him because he is in the chat right now, too.
All right.
All right. So let's jump to our predictions.
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
And it's interesting to note, this will be our final predictions that we ever do for Man in the High Castle, because we have one more episode and the show is done unless they do a spinoff.
Yes, so these better be good.
So, Belle.
Oh, boy. Okay, so as I kind of mentioned before, I have a feeling Helen is going to end up giving John, basically kind of giving up John to Juliana. But I think it's going to backfire. I don't see John dying in the last episode. I feel like he is just too central. Too central a role, too powerful. I feel like it may backfire, and then Helen might get killed in the process, is what I'm afraid of. So that's probably my biggest prediction. As for Keto, I'm hoping that maybe Toru jumps in, because we've already seen Toru kind of throw these martial arts moves, and, you know, he could probably fend off a few people. I'd love to see Toru, like, kind of save Keto, or somehow, or even if there's a moment where they can kind of reconnect, even if Keto has to die for the things that he's done, I hope they kind of get one moment where it almost, like, it makes it worth it for Keto. So those are my two big predictions.
Awesome.
Coming up.
I think that John Smith has been lying to us the entire show.
Whoa,
that is the big reveal, and that we're going to find out in this last episode that he's actually been doing things to get rid of to get rid of the Nazis, and that he's done crappy things, but only so that he could get to a better end result.
I like that.
So I think that he's got a couple things left to do. Okay. That the rest of his plans, because we know that at this point he's trying to get his son.
Yeah.
And I feel like if they do not touch on that, they're going to be missing a major beat that we've seen in season four. So my guess is that this last episode is going to revolve on somehow either Thomas coming to this world or John going to be with Thomas. I think that Juliana is going to go back to the alt world when she's done with Wyatt. I think they're going to live out the rest of their days. I think that Childan is going to find another way to get to Yukiko.
Yes. I'm hoping maybe the Crown Princess, of course, we didn't ask Miami if she shows back up. But that'd be great if maybe she could come back in and or just, like, personally take Childan with her.
Yeah.
Because that's probably the only way he could get over. Or if, like, Yukiko pulled some strings and maybe found a way to get him over.
Or Kiddo at the end.
Or, yeah.
Because we don't know what his fate is yet. So I feel like not that Kiddo has a chance now, because I think even he feels like he's stranded. But in the event that he could somehow wire someone or, like, get in contact, I feel like he would eventually take pity on Childan.
That's
and
true.
That maybe Toru, Childan, and Childan. Kiddo, Toru, and Childan
could all go together.
Yeah. My other comment.
Yeah.
This entire show, they have been teasing the N-word, nukes. Like, it is just.
Yes. That's true. So, I'm a little nervous that. I'm afraid that this ending is going to be kind of tragic. Like, I want everything to just end happy and nice, but I feel like it would not really be true to the nature of the show for everything to end a little optimistic. I feel like something terrible has got to happen. So, unless that's what I'm like, is John going to throw some nukes out? I don't know. Yeah.
I almost wonder, and this was my theory last time, that they're going to throw, that the nukes are going to destroy this world. And that they're going to be forced to leave.
And then it's just, and then maybe whoever can make it through the portal just goes through. I didn't even think about that. But that would kind of, that might just be the tragic ending we need to just feel like clean slate, start over in a new world.
And it would be it would be addressing, that's not a very good message to leave on. Because the idea, the idea would be to show, hey, even in the worst situations, people can start over. But good maybe point. not with a nuke. But,
yeah. But you're right, to kind of like salvage what's already here rather than just like killing everyone else, starting clean. Yeah, actually, I think it would be more redeeming if we could see that it is possible to go back. This is going to be tough to know how this ends.
Yeah. Well, all right. Good. I think that we've pretty much hit
the hot points.
Belle, where can everybody find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram. It is Bebenship, which is B as in Belle, EBENSHIP.
And you can find me on Twitter at Rach Goodman or on my author Instagram account at Rachel Radner Author. We will be back in 2 weeks to do the final after show for Man in the High Castle. So stay tuned. We come back after the studio is closed on January 5th.
All right.
We will see you then.
Join us then.
Happy holidays.
Bye, guys.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.